Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today, an update on the proposed Route 66 Museum in Tulsa and plans for the Tulsa section of the road. The Route 66 Commission and city officials are looking to develop a parcel of land that runs under the new I-244 bridge on the west side of the river. It's one of the last projects of the original Vision 2025 funding. A meeting was held earlier this week to solicit citizen feedback for the sliver of green space between the interstate and Southwest Boulevard leading up to the west bank of the river. Across the river is the terminus of Riverside Drive and Southwest Boulevard, and that's the proposed site for the Route 66 Museum. This $19 million facility will feature a bridge, a like architectural design, a drive-in theater within the museum complex, and a unique virtual reality tour of Route 66. When announced in 2015, museum organizers had hoped to break ground by this time. But Route 66 Alliance CEO Ken Busby tells us that he expects the opening date to remain intact, and he joins us today to give us an update and overview of the project. Ken Busby, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich. It's good to be here.
A lot of people are looking at where we are on the Route 66 Museum. I know you announced the plans for the Route 66 experience in the spring of 2015. Where are we in getting this museum going?
We're making good progress, actually, and so it's good to give everyone an update. We've raised $13 million toward our $23 million total goal, and that includes some money for endowment as well. We're putting about $2.5-3 million aside for endowment, just for operating, for maintenance, that kind of thing. And so right now, what we're focusing on are some national funders, because what I'm really trying to do is bring some new money into Tulsa. This is an America story, and it certainly is the very heart of it here in Tulsa. But I'm trying to bring in some new money on a national level, because there's so many good things happening in Tulsa already. And you think about the Gathering Place and all the great things that the George Kaiser Family Foundation is doing. And it's like, okay, we need to give them some more help. We need to see if we can get some other people investing in the great things that are happening in Tulsa and not always going back to the same sources. So we had great local support, but I'm also trying to do this. So right now we're really focused on a couple of national funders that would be a game changer for us and really get this going.
Now, have you had any national funders commit? Either publicly or privately?
Privately, yes. Mm-hmm. Not quite ready to announce those yet, but we've had one, and we have another one that's looking really, really promising. And I say that in that we've now, they've been back to me three times with additional questions and interest in what we're doing. So I'm feeling really good about it. So I hope to be back on your show very soon with a big announcement. And because if it all comes together quickly, we'll wrap up funding this spring, break ground this summer, and then open. My goal is to open by November of 2018, so that we're sandwiching in between the great things of the Gathering Place opening on Riverside, then hopefully we'll open that in 18, and then we'll have OK Pop opening in 19. And it could just be for Tulsa, just a series of really great things happening, really driving the momentum of the development of our city.
So once this museum is open, how will it affect I remember when we first passed Vision 2025, the idea that we needed to renovate our convention center, and that would lead to a lot more convention center business.
Right.
Now, the convention business has completely changed since then.
It has.
But would a museum like that, would things like OK Pop really change that as far as bringing more people into our community?
It absolutely will. What's fascinating about Route 66 to me, and what I've learned since I've been working on this project, is the interest both nationally and internationally about Route 66. So I was just in Washington, D.C. a couple weeks ago at a Transportation Research Board annual meeting. It's one of them. 14,000 people attending that are mostly concrete and asphalt and bridge people and engineers and so forth. Ours was the standout exhibit at this showcase because it was different from everything else they were doing. All these surveyors, all these things. But people were so excited, and people were coming up to me from Australia and Great Britain and Germany and Japan talking about, well, first they would say, get your kicks on Route 66. Yeah. Then they would sing Oklahoma. So it was great. I got serenaded a lot. But it was the interest in it. Young, old, because there's a fascination with Route 66. It's history. It's Americana. It is the very essence of what it means to be an American, is this great iconic road, 2,448 miles from Chicago to Santa Monica, and all coming through Tulsa, Oklahoma, because of the 11th Street Bridge, what we call the Cyrus Avery Memorial Bridge now. Mm-hmm. all because of that bridge. And so people are just fascinated by that story. And you and I were talking earlier about the motels that are along the way and the mm-hmm. neon, and mm-hmm. we can talk more about that. But it's all of that sort of iconography that people are relating to, and they want to experience it themselves. Everyone was talking to me about bucket list trips, so they want to rent a Harley and do it, or they want to rent a convertible in Chicago and do the trip. And today you can still drive about 85% of the original road. There's about 15% you just can't get onto, but 85% of it, you can still have that experience. And so this interpretive center and museum that we're putting together is going to let people understand that history, have some really cool virtual reality experiences of the road. But more importantly for Tulsa, when you talk about OK Pop and so on, we're adding to Tulsa being a destination that people want to come to Tulsa to have these experiences. And once we get them here learning about Route 66 and our pop culture and so forth, what else should you be exploring while you're in Tulsa? Oh, you've got children. Well, go see the Oklahoma Aquarium and go see the Tulsa Zoo. Oh, you've got an interest in this. Go see the Gilcrease with its American history. James Pepper Henry, the director there, and I have had numerous conversations about how we're going to connect people and get, because there is that interest in American history, and it seems like Route 66 ties all that together.
When I think of Route 66, I think of it as a baby boomer phenomenon.
Yes.
Which is, okay, in one way, that's great, but uh-huh. perhaps we're past the time where we should invest money in something like this. Do you see it having a cultural interest beyond the baby boomer generation that grew up with the song, with the television series, and this idea of this iconic road?
Sure, and that's all still there, and more so for the European and the Asian traveler, interestingly enough, they're still watching those reruns of those shows. Those are still playing in Europe and Asia, which is fascinating. So that myth for them is still alive. It's like back in the 80s when we had the evening soap opera Dallas, mm-hmm. and everyone that was America. It's Dallas. It's these huge ranches and oil money and cattle. Those still play over there too, so they still have this belief that this is America today. Mm. And even though with social media and all the things that we have and CNN and all the things that we have, there's still a belief that that exists in some capacity. And so for people that are on the stretch of the Mother Road or anywhere along the 2,448 miles, it's that interest and that peak, and the little mom and pops are still keeping these things going because people want that nostalgic moment. And even the 20-somethings are wanting it. It's historic for them. It's not something they grew up with, but it's like, well, my parents talked about it or my grandparents talked about it, and so I want to know more about it because they thought it was so cool. What's cool about it? And so they're finding new ways to make it cool for them. So they're wanting those experiences today.
Well, as you look at the road itself, mm-hmm. now, as not only from the Route 66 Alliance, but also from the commission here in Tulsa,
sure.
how much authenticity still remains along the road? Because a lot of these sort of iconic structures are gone, or they're right. either dilapidated in poor
sure.
shape or
sure.
just completely gone. That sort of defines the road.
Right. And you hit a good word. The authentic experience is what people are looking for. So wherever we can herald those things or build those things up or encourage people to take advantage of a dilapidated building or warehouse or whatever and do something more with it, that's what we're going to try to do. And that's one of the things that the Route 66 Commission's focused on, because we're receiving our funding, or will be, through the latest Vision Tulsa package. So that's been starting collecting now. So I met with Mayor Bynum earlier, and he said probably July we'll start being able to see some of that. Now, we have a very small budget, about $200,000 a year, but our plan with that is to do things like facade grants to help people that might want to take a building. Maybe we can help offset some of their repairing of windows, or if they've got a neon sign that's not working correctly, maybe we can help give them some money to help get it fixed. In other words, what we're going to do is encourage people to use Route 66 as a catalyst that we then market through things like Visit Tulsa at the Tulsa Regional Chamber, and they have been totally on board with helping support this initiative of driving business development on Route 66, whether one of the two alignments, because we have the Admiral Kendall Whittier alignment, which was from 1926 to 1932, so we're heralding that, as well as the 11th Street that everyone thinks about that becomes Southwest Boulevard as you go through downtown Tulsa. So, and then you look at the Lobeck Taylor Foundation and all their great work on Route 66. So a lot of people are coming to Route 66 right now and saying, okay, this is something for Tulsa. This is something that we have that we haven't overly done anything really with, but there's interest in it. So if we market it right and tell folks, come to Tulsa for these authentic Route 66 experiences, then we can drive marketing that way and get them here.
Now, the other question is, do they have to be authentic Route 66 experiences? Because you see a lot of adaptive reuse along the road that's starting to happen,
right?
Which can be good. You know, I always think of the old Metro Diner,
right,
which sort of came to define Tulsa for a long time on 11th. And
right,
it was an old Arby's.
Right. 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 So not exactly the authentic experience we were thinking about. But
it became that.
But it became
because
that.
You put some stainless steel on the outside and some neon, and all of a sudden it's authentic.
Sure.
At least in a way.
Authentic-ish.
Yeah.
So, yes. And just like we have lost so many of our wonderful Art Deco and mid-century buildings in downtown Tulsa over the years, we can really use folks that want to do that and sort of create the new look, the new, you know, 50s look, 50 diner look. That's okay too. What we're hoping to do is, that's great. Adaptive reuse is fine. Make it look like it. That's great. And then we'll still point out those places like the old 11th Street Bridge, things that are truly unique or and authentic, and let folks see the difference. Because look at the new the Route 66 experience, the Interpretive Center Museum that we're doing. That's obviously new construction and all of that, but we're going to have some history elements and things through virtual reality and things that we can do to give them those authentic moments, and then also use it as a way to send people to authentic places to go, say, go see the Round Barn, go to Arcadia, go to area things that are of interest to you. But there are fewer and fewer, so we want to try to start really preserving those that we can.
From the commission standpoint, yeah, when you think of the major iconography around Route 66, it's oftentimes these roadside motels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you still drive through Winslow, Arizona, you see the little teepee
absolutely,
motel.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And they're taking care of it, and it looks great.
Uh-huh.
Now, in our part of the – and really across the state, you know, there's some of these great bones of these great old roadside motels.
Absolutely.
From not only here in Tulsa, but you go out west in Clinton and Weatherford, but most of them are standing moribund or
– right.
Or they're monthly rentals and things like that.
Sure, sure.
Not for a tourism.
Right. And so one of the things, and you bring up a good point with the motels. So we have several in Tulsa, a couple that are on Route 66 that have been maintained. But we have quite a few that still exist that aren't. So one of the questions is, and it always comes down to this, we always talk about it, but I've talked to a couple developers who are looking at some of those properties. Is there a way? But it's the critical mass. It's always the cart before the horse, or which comes first, the chicken or the egg. Because it's like, well, we'll invest in that if we think there are travelers coming. Well, which one comes first? So our whole point is, we're going to do this experience. We're going to work. We're working with OK Pop. We're doing all of these things that we're doing to create a destination. With that destination is going to come people that want those experiences, and that will then drive people to say, oh, well, let me redo this motel here, because now we have this many more people coming to Tulsa than we had before that are wanting those kinds of experiences. So we think before they're torn down, we think we can really make a strong connection, and people will want to develop those further, because then there's going to be a traffic for them.
You mentioned a couple of developers who are interested in this. You know, I always think of one of the things, saving graces of the Brady District, was you had a couple of developers who basically bought those buildings really cheap,
yes,
sat on them for a long time. Sometimes people were saying, well, maybe they sat on them too long, but eventually now they're being developed, and you still have these historic bones of
the
brick buildings from the beginning of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you see the same with the developers along Route 66, where there are people sort of saying, okay, I'm going to buy this,
uh-huh,
and I'm just going to hold on to it and just see what happens?
Over the last 2 months, I know of 8 parcels that have been purchased on Route 66 with no idea exactly what to develop, but they looked good enough and interesting enough.
Speculative.
Yeah. And so, but they've got them. And so at least we're not going to tear them down. And so we'll figure out what can be done with them. But yes, they're absolutely looking that way now. So now for Tulsa, just like the Brady has developed and Blue Dome and so forth, and there's more to come, but still now people are looking at Route 66, and it's like, oh, we better hold on to this. There's something coming. They can see light at the end of the tunnel. It's not an oncoming train. It's actually light, and we better hold these, and then we'll develop them. So yeah, that is happening even as we speak.
All right. My guest today is Ken Busby, the CEO of the Route 66 Alliance. We're getting an update on the proposed Route 66 Experience Museum, which will be built eventually at Riverside and Southwest Boulevard, right across from the little Cyrus Avery Plaza.
Right up on Crybaby Hill.
Yep. And it's a really interesting design. What's also interesting is, as far as future plans, the renovation of the old 11th Street Bridge is sort of long-range plan of making sure that structure stays up and open,
right,
as a passageway.
As you well know, it is not in good shape, and we don't allow any even pedestrians on it. And there are places literally you can walk on the deck. I was allowed to do this just so I had a better sense of what was going on.
And you can see the river.
And you can see the river looking through the deck. So this is not good. But no, our long-range plan is once we finish funding for the experience, we will then turn to the bridge. Because, interestingly enough, with Route 66 goers, travelers, they love bridges almost above all else. Those are the things that really appeal to them. And we have the authentic one. The reason that Route 66 came to Tulsa is because of that bridge and the work of Cyrus Avery back in 1926. And so we want to help tell that story, but in a way, but you talk about adaptive reuse. So let's say we redo that down to the bones, but we redo it, make it just like it was, using the newest technologies to make it last and all that. But it's still there, it is, and it's authentic because we have the beautiful sides and all of it that's there. But then you make it for pedestrian and bicycle traffic. And then you talk about food trucks. And then you talk about concerts. And you talk about maybe some interesting neon lighting that could be added along it, some neon signs that are historic. So we'll create a new interpretation of the bridge, but it's still that authentic bridge that we're doing. And so that's very exciting.
You mentioned a neon, and, mm-hmm. and I know there's been several efforts at one point to sort of create a, if you will, a neon ranch.
Yes.
You know, with I think at one point the Medigol sign was supposed to be sort
right.
of the centerpiece. Now it's up on Route 66 at least.
But the clocks are working.
Yeah, and the clocks are working, uh-huh. apparently keeping time now.
Yes, uh-huh. So, we're very proud of that.
So is there any efforts now, or is that just sort of comes and goes?
It comes and goes. We have several collectors in town that have a lot of neon, and they're preserving it, and they're in working model, and they're working shape. But they don't want to let it go yet. Yeah. So I don't know what's going to happen, but neon is certainly in our discussions discussions with some public meetings that we've had. People love the idea of neon and maybe doing something with a bridge that really showcases neon. So whether it's vintage signs or something new, that's going to be an element. It has to be, because neon is what people associate with Route 66. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned the design that we have planned for the experience. And I have to do just a quick shout out to the amazing architects of Seltzer Schaefer Architects who've come up with this design. Bob Schaefer, because they are really working, again, the idea is something that will capture people's minds and attention and make them want to engage in it. And I was so fortunate when Michael Wallace asked me to come be a part of this effort, because he already had, I consider, a really dream team. He already had Seltzer Schaefer lined up, and he had the Ross Group, who's going to do our construction. And that's actually where I'm officing right now, which is great, because these are people that are passionate about Route 66. And that's what I think is so amazing. These people, I mean, when I say that, Warren Ross of the Ross Group, his original offices, the last iteration, was on 11th Street. And his new offices, when he revamped the International Harvester building there on 2nd Street, 2nd and Frankfort, but that is the old alignment of Route 66, so he's still on Route 66. He is determined to stay on Route 66, but it's that kind of passion that I think is what's cool, and the same for Bob Schaefer. It's a huge interest and love of Route 66.
So it won't just be another project.
No, these people are just like so into it, and I mean, it's, I say I get chill bumps, but it's like that enthusiasm. It's like kids in a candy store. It's like, this is going to be so great, and this is going to be so great for Tulsa, and I think that's what's so cool about this project. It's going to be great for Tulsa. It's going to be great for Oklahoma. It's going to be great for the eight states as we connect from Chicago to Santa Monica that have Route 66 in them. And I think it's such an iconic road and such an important history that we'll be able to tell and yet make it new with new, you know, virtual reality, all the new things that younger generations will be excited about, but yet learning about history in a very fun way.
So all the design aspects, are they fairly well complete? Because I know you sort of released this rendering of what
it'll probably tweak a little bit. All things do, but the general concept of cantilevering over Riverside is definitely
sort
there.
Of a bridge design.
Bridge design, uh-huh. And that's exactly what it's. Thank you for getting it. That's exactly what it's supposed to be. And then we'll have up on the top a 40-car drive-in movie theater, because that is. And every time I tell people we're going to have a drive-in movie theater, they think that is so cool, because there aren't many left. You have the Admiral Twin and the Admiral Twin in Tulsa, you know, and thank God for the Admiral Twin. Because it's iconic, too. It's those elements of it that get people excited. So, you know, that whole idea of sort of the bridge, and it bridges and it guides people taking that 7th Street exit right there off of 244. And then immediately as they hit Southwest Boulevard, they're on Route 66. So it's that easy to get them on the route, and then they can start exploring Tulsa. So we're going to try to get them off the interstate and exploring Tulsa, and then, hey, travel on Route 66 over to Oklahoma City, and stop at the Rock Cafe for lunch, and visit the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum when you get there, and other things too in Oklahoma City. But again, those kinds of connections, and what's been really refreshing too, talking with Bob Blackburn at the Oklahoma Historical Society and about OK Pop and all of it, it's like we're all trying to work together. How do we do this? And the new director, I guess he's not that new anymore, but Scott Stulen over at Philbrook, he's already met with me a couple of times saying, you know, as you get ready to launch this, you know, we want to do an exhibit about Route 66 at Philbrook, and so that we're all tying this together. And I'm like, it's so great to have visionary people looking at this and getting it. And so, and Scott's younger than I am, and yet he gets it. And he's like, oh, this is so cool. And I've got friends who travel it, and they rent Harleys, or they have Harleys, and they do all this. And it's not just Harley riders, but I'm just saying it's a classic American dream, and that Route 66 represents. And the community is really embracing it.
Now, this museum is one of a number along the course of the road. Are you trying to make it, it sounds like from the design you're making it completely different, but how do you distinguish itself from, well, you know, even you look in our state, there's like two or three small Route 66
and they're great.
All along the road. So why another museum?
Because nobody's doing what we're doing in terms of that whole experience, the virtual reality. Nobody's doing this virtual reality component where you'll be able to literally travel the road, see some of the sights, like in the bed of a Ford Mustang 1966 kind of thing. So nobody's doing that. Others will probably follow. We'll probably set the way for others to follow us, but that's okay. But nobody's having that experience right now. And the other reason for having this, and I'm being serious, is Tulsa has really undervalued Route 66 all these years. I mean, thank God for Michael Wallace and Cy Avery's grandson, Stevens Avery, who are keeping it alive, and Michael's book on the Mother Road.
He also had a lot of little small businesses located along the road that sort of just did their own homegrown PR about
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so all what we're going to try to do then is really promote that and just tell, remind, here's all of the mom and pop places you need to visit along the road. Here's all the things that you can see that you might not know about or might not be in this particular guidebook or whatever. We're going to try to highlight those so that people know where to go and how to have those authentic experiences. But Tulsa, we talk about it's where east meets west because of that bridge. Had it not been for that bridge, if you look at the map I'm holding to the microphone, if you look at from Chicago to Santa Monica, you would never come through Tulsa. You'd go through Iowa, Nebraska. If you're trying to sort of make a straightish route to get there,
right.
It was because of that bridge that already existed. It was the first concrete and steel bridge across the Arkansas River.
So it was a modern bridge.
It was a modern bridge. It was the safe way to cross the Arkansas, and you were going to have to cross it somewhere as you're going to California. And Cy Avery convinced the Highway Association to make it Tulsa because we had the bridge, and that was the safe way for Americans to travel. And the highway system said, yes, absolutely. We want our drivers to be safe.
All right.
And so we want to tell that story.
All right. How do people learn more about the Alliance and also the Pose Museum?
Probably just our website's the easiest thing. So that's Route66Alliance, all one word, .org. And Route is spelled out R-O-U-T-E, 66Alliance.org.
All right. Well, Ken, we look forward to the day when you're breaking ground.
Me too.
On the experience.
You'll be there, right?
I will.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be here.
Ken Busby is the Route 66 Alliance CEO. The Route 66 Alliance is behind the proposed Route 66 Museum, a $19.5 million facility to be built at the corner of Riverside Drive and Southwest Boulevard here in Tulsa. For more information about the Alliance and the proposed museum, visit Route66Alliance.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Mark Dara.
Ruby Ripley had no children, but she had a library. I met her once and remember her not for what she said, but for what she didn't say. The Pawnee Public Library used to be located on the first floor of the Pawnee County Courthouse. One day I saw a table of books in the hallway outside the library's door with a sign that read, Book Sale. I stopped and looked. These were not donated discards, but quality books taken from the library's collection. They had been marked to sell, so I picked up a few and went through the door. A tall, slender, elderly woman came to the front desk. Was she the librarian who had worked here when my wife was a child and visited the library every Saturday during the summer, checking out the three books aloud and returning the following Saturday to check out more? "You have some good books out there," I said to the librarian. "Why are they for sale?" "The library is being moved to the old jail," she said, "and we won't have room in the new location." "That's too bad." "Yes." "You can look around in here, too, and if you see any books you want, bring them to me, and I will see if we can sell them to you." I found a mystery I wanted and took the volume to the librarian, who I would later learn was named Ruby Ripley. I got ready to pay for it and the others I had picked up from the table outside. Ruby Ripley opened the book, looked at the title, and looked at the card that showed its last checkout date. It had been over a decade since a patron had taken the book out of the library. Ruby Ripley paused. I waited. She finally said, "Okay." I bought the books and left, but I didn't feel good about it. I remember Ruby Ripley's pause. My wife later confirmed the librarian had been the one who had helped her years before. Ruby Ripley had served as librarian there for decades, and most of the books in the collection had been originally purchased with her guidance. Certainly the one I took off the shelf had been. When Ruby Ripley paused, I wondered whether she felt like she was giving up one of her kids. That wasn't it, though, I don't think. She originally selected books for the library, I suspect, because she thought of those who would be reading them. That little Robinson girl reads all of the Nancy Drew books. Maybe this is a book she would like. Here's an archaeology book Mr. Freeman would read, and Nellie Brown would certainly love this romance. When Ruby Ripley paused that day, perhaps she remembered she was the keeper of her community's gifts to its citizens. The Pawnee Library has escaped the old jail building and now has a modern, much larger facility and an energetic librarian. I've returned the mystery I took off the shelf that day, and I vow once more to never diminish a public library again.
Mark Dara is a local attorney and author. His most recent collection is titled A Catalog of Common People, and he's a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
The University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Taylor at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days' notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.